Hey everyone, Mark Inesito here for Music Facts and Figures, a podcast by Mark Inesito. Thank you for tuning in. I appreciate it. This is my first podcast in a while. A lot of you may know that I'm currently a part-time student, college student, and well, last semester I took one class, which was I had a little bit more time on my hands. I've been doing a lot of podcasting, unfortunately. But I probably had more time to do one if I wanted to, but I guess I got lazy again. And it just happens to the best of us. We get lazy, you know? Not taking two classes again, which I usually do take two classes for the most part. I'm working full time, so I go part time. I'm close, very close to getting my bachelor's, so hopefully it happens sooner than later. But yeah, it's been a struggle trying to get my time managing skills this semester because I'm taking two classes again. But I kind of figured things out a little bit, giving me a little bit of time to think about it. I got this. So my goal is to get a podcast out once a week if I can. If not, bear with me. You will get a podcast out when I can't predict it. But my goal is once a week for the most part. That's my goal. That being said, let's get started. Well, one more thing before we get started. I made a promise to somebody on Facebook, a friend of mine. Name is Matt Palm. Hi, Matt. I would show my dog off, the new dog. We haven't sold last August. My wife and I got a new dog. Her name is Zara. She's a Canaan, which is a national dog of Israel. And the story of her name is that she, we have a friend of ours from Lebanon. He's going to name her Zara. I said, she called her Zara. I'm like, okay, what does that mean? And her, it is, in Lebanese, it means queen. So that's her name, Zara. Come here, Zara. Send the camera. Come on. Oh, she's behind me. Come on. There you are. You're on camera, see? Who's that? Say, who is he? Who's that? Who's that? Who's that? Who's that? Who's that? Is that you? That's you. She's cool. She's cool. She's cool. Zara, folks. Okay. So let's get started. So today's podcast is going to be about my music. Well, it's going to be in regards to my history of music series I'm working on. It's actually going to be my fourth installment of the Beatles' Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band album, and the final part two of that. Basically, what it was, the first part was about the album itself in their own words. The second part was about the album cover. In their own words. The third part was about a more in-depth look at the final song on the album, A Day in the Life. And this is part four. I'm not gonna really dive deep into the description of it, but give you like a brief, like little nutshell idea of what it's about. Like just basic, because I don't want to ruin any surprises. You know, it's not, I mean, I found an article online about it and it's really interesting. I'm gonna read it. It's very detailed and descriptive. I like it a lot. I'm going to share it. It should give you a straightforward idea of what we're talking about here. So basically what it's talking about, between 1965 and 67, the Beatles and Beach Boys were pretty much like competing with each other. Like who's going to make the better record? Who's going to make the better album? So on and so forth. You know what I mean? Right. And that's what was going on. And Brian Wilson had a project he was going to work on with the Beach Boys that he put on hold because, well, you'll find out when I read it, when I read the article. So, and I'm a little excited about this and nervous about it too, because I'm also going to use pictures on this. I used pictures before, but now I'm going to do it in a PowerPoint format because I found out you can do pictures in this as long as you cite your sources. Give credit where the credit is due. That's what counts to me. So I'm a little nervous and excited. I think what I'm nervous about is trying to make sure I change my picture on time so I can. You know the point of this. So I'm telling the story. Here's a picture of the Beatles. I'm talking about the Beach Boys. Well, wait a minute. Go back to the Beatles, Beach Boys again. You know, So I just want to stay on it. Let's do it. Let's do it. Make it happen, right? Make it happen. So let's get started. So the source I'm going to use today is an article I found online on a website called brooklynvegan.com. So that's the source I'm using. The article is called, where is it? Pet Sounds versus Sgt. Pepper's versus Smile. Who had the ultimate psychedelic pop out? It's written by, I apologize if I'm going to butcher his last name, Andrew Sacher, capital Sacher. It's published on January 15th, 2022. It's a really good article, and I'm going to read it to you guys. So let's get into it. Let's share the screen, and we'll rock and roll, literally. Okay, now we're in business. Where is my thing at? There it is. Okay. Again, from brooklynvegan.com. Pet Sounds versus Sgt. Pepper's versus Smile. Who had the ultimate psychedelic pop album? Okay. 1966, Pet Sounds, Revolver, Good Vibrations, and the arrival of psychedelic pop. The Beatles were listening closely to the Beach Boys when they wrote Rubber Soul. And Brian Wilson, sorry, and Brian Wilson was listening right back. Rubber Soul was probably the greatest record ever, Brian wrote in his memoir, I Am Brian Wilson. It came out in December of 1965 and sent me right to the piano bench, he said. It wasn't just the lyrics and the melodies, but the production and the harmonies. It was almost art music. The song that came out when Brian went to his piano and tried to top Rubber Soul, God only knows, which Paul McCartney later called his favorite song of all time. God Only Knows is indeed one of the greatest songs of all time, but Brian wasn't content to stop there. He wanted to make a grand album and statement, just like the Beatles did, and that statement was Pet Sounds. Brian was fully in the director's chair, handling songwriting, production, arrangements, and the bulk of the lead vocals, with lyrical co-writing by Tony Asher. And the result was a deeply personal, psychedelic Baroque pop album that pushed the boundaries of pop music further than he or anyone else had yet. There's not an ounce of filler, and with the help of over 40 session musicians, it was some of the most intricately arranged pop music than anyone in 1966 would have heard. Among those listening, the Beatles, of course. The influence of Pet Sounds would fully reveal itself in 1967's Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band, but already crept into the Beatles' music on 1966's Revolver. Here, There, and Everywhere, which was one of the last songs Paul wrote for Revolver, was said to be directly inspired by Pet Sounds. In particular, the song God Only Knows. Like Brian Wilson, the Beatles and producer George Martin were growing increasingly interested in string and horn arrangements on Revolver, which showed on a definite. Sorry, I lost my spot for a minute. I got distracted. Apologize. It showed on the definite Baroque pop of Eleanor Rigby. The French horn solo on For No One, and the horn section on I'm Gotta Get You Into My Life. The band and engineer Jeff Emmerich were also learning to use studio as an instrument, coming out with the backwards guitars of the psych folk gem I'm Only Sleeping and the deeply psychedelic Tomorrow Never Knows. George Harrison was even more into Indian music during the Revolver sessions than he was with when making Rubber Soul. As heard on Love You Too, which didn't just use sitar but dove headfirst to Indian classical music. The influence of LSD was prevalent in all throughout Revolver and non album singles Paperback Writer and Rain. It was the most overtly trippy music that either the Beach Boys or Beatles had released yet. For all the books and documentaries and articles that talk about Brian Wilson's reaction to Rubber Soul and Sgt. Pepper's, he never seems to mention Revolver. Maybe that's because Brian's main goal in late 1966 was topping his own Pet Sounds. While he was working on Pet Sounds, he had already begun work on what would become the band's next single, the mini epic that would push pop music forward once again, Good Vibrations. The highly ambitious, multi-part, heavily layered song came together in the studio for over a period of 7 months, an unheard of amount of time to spend on one song in 1966. From the vivid imagery in the lyrics to the arrangements, it embraced psychedelia more directly than Pet Sounds. It made historic advances in using the studio as an instrument. It helped popularize the electro theremin, and the its unique song structure helped pave the way for the progressive pop genre. It was not only acknowledged by critics and fellow musicians as a major feat in pop music, it was successful too. Unlike anything on Pet Sounds, Good Vibrations hit number one. Brian proudly marketed it as the first single of the Beach Boys' upcoming album, Smile, which he promised would be with top Pet Sounds. It'd be an entire album of ambitious as Good Vibrations. As Brian was sitting on top Pet Sounds, so were the Beatles. Without Pet Sounds, Sgt. Pepper's wouldn't have been made, George Martin once said, the Beatles producer. I played Pet Sounds to John so much that it would be difficult for him to escape the influence. Paul said of its influence on Sgt. Pepper's, if records had a director within the band, I sort of directed Pepper, and my influence was basically the Pet Sounds album. And one more album, too, that Paul McCartney really liked that inspired him to do Sgt. Pepper's was this album right here. It's not mentioned in this article, but I'm going to share the story. It's was considered to be the first rock concept album, and it's up there with Bob Dylan's Blonde on Blonde as being one of the first double albums, the two record set, led by Frank Zappa, the dude right here in the fur coat. You see him right there. The Mothers of Invention, in the album Freak Out, that inspired Paul McCartney to do a con to make Sgt. Pepper into a concept album on this fictitious band, doing their songs and stuff. That was the basic idea. Good album, by the way. Good album. It's easy to hear how the Pet Sounds, Baroque Pop, and the Beach Boys harmonies directly impacted Sgt. Pepper's. And Paul had said Pet Sounds also influenced his melodic bass lines on the album. But as they always did, the Beatles took it further. They continued to explore Indian music, folk music, harder-edged acid rock, circus music, vaudeville, and much more. And the way they fused it all together was seamless. The first single to be released from the sessions was a non-album double A side single, Penny Lane and Strawberry Fields Forever. And it was hearing Strawberry Fields Forever along with mental health issues and pressure from Capitol Records, Brian's father Murray, and Mike Love that caused M Brian to abandon his much hyped Smile album. As legend has it, Brian was driving with his friend Michael Voss as Strawberry Fields Forever came on the radio. He pulled over and said to his friend, "They did it already. What I wanted to do was smile. Maybe it's too late." Wanted that with Jeff so fast. I'm sorry. As we all know now, it wouldn't have been too late, but Brian was not too wrong to interpret Strawberry Fields Forever as yet another leap forward into this pop music race. It packaged together everything that was great about mid to late 60s. Beatles in one song, from the Baroque pop string and horn arrangements to the droning Indian influence and the vivid psychedelic imagery to the soaring sunshiny vocals. It's one of the most innovative and most gorgeous pop songs ever written. Brian gave up on what would have been his masterpiece, but the Beatles moved right along with their Sgt. Pepper's. Didn't include Strawberry Fields, but Forever, but it achieved everything Brian thought it would when he first heard the song. If Pet Sounds was a concept album, then Sgt. Pepper's was more of a proto-rock opera. Tired of Beatlemania, the Beatles played the made-up band Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band, and the album was presented as a show, introducing you to the Lonely Hearts Club Band, and into and on its intro track, and then letting Billy Shears' Ringo's alter ego take it away on "With Little Help from My Friends," and then allowing all kinds of creative pop chaos to ensue. There's not a moment worth skipping on Sgt. Pepper's, but the Beatles saved the best for last. A thank you for coming on the penultimate track, then gave fans an encore in the form of A Day in the Life. It's a psychedelic, dreamlike, multi-part pop song that rivaled Good Vibrations. The bar for pop had been raised once again. The Beatles didn't stop there. Before 1967 came to a close, they issued Magical Mystery Tour, a continuation of Sgt. Pepper's whimsical psychedelia. It was originally conceived as an EP to the soundtrack, the band's trippy, Ken Kesey-inspired film of the same name, but eventually was released as a full-length with their non-album singles from the era on Side B, including Strawberry Fields Forever and Penny Lane, plus Hello Goodbye, Baby You're a Rich Man, and All You Need Is Love. Some of Magical Mystery Tour songs are even more far out than Sgt. Pepper's. Blue Jay Way, The Fool on the Hill, and all of them are just as monumental as the Pepper songs. In 1966, NME, the New Musical Express, announced a tie for Album of the Year between Pet Sounds and Revolver. In 1967, as far as most of the general public was concerned, the Beatles has surpassed the Beach Boys by a mile. It's one of pop music's greatest tragedies, as that Brian Wilson abandoned Smile. If he hadn't, there may have been another tie for Album of the Year in 1967, or maybe Smile would have won. We now know that Smile wasn't as ambitious of an album as Good Vibrations. It was a single, and then arguably did surpass Sgt. Pepper's in terms of pop music innovation because of the songs trickled out over the years. Various versions of Smile were bootlegged and traded between Beach Boys fans, and then Brian released his own re-recording of the album in 2004, followed by the long-awaited release of the original Smile sessions in 2011. But in 1967, the only thing the Beach Boys had to show for was the album Smiley Smile, a scrappy home-recorded album that included raw, stripped-down versions of songs from the Smile sessions, a few newer ones, and a single version of Good Vibrations. It also allegedly featured a recording of Paul McCartney chewing celery on vegetables. Sorry, that was funny. The album was a commercial failure, and many who did hear it considered it an artistic failure too. But this eccentric album had its supporters, like The Who's Pete Townshend, and it went on to become hugely influential on the lo-fi psychedelic pop scene in the 90s and 2000s. Smiley Smile was followed by, in late 1967, by Wild Honey, which was cut from a very similar call, but added in a soul R&B edge and a Stevie Wonder cover, and is also a lo-fi pop jam. Pop music history as we know it might have been a lot different if Smile came out. That's a smile right there. That's a smile that he wanted to do initially. That was released in 2011, finally. Okay. Sorry, I lost my spot. Everything happens. Okay. Pop music history as we know it might have been a lot different if Smile came out. But everything happened for a reason. Excuse me, I'm sorry. Sneezing that. And Smiley Smile and Wild Honey have become a crucial albums of their own, even if more people in the 1960s didn't think they would. Because smile does now exist in just about complete form, it's impossible not to wonder what might have happened if it was released in 1967 as originally planned. It's truly the pop masterpiece that Brian always promised it to be. It helped pioneer the use of song cycles with pop music and was written with help from Van Dyke Parks, who named his own like-minded 1966 album Song Cycle, with multiple songs that flow directly into each other, songs within songs, and reoccurring musical and lyrical motifs throughout. It's full of breathtaking highlights like Surf's Up, Heroes and Villains, Cabin Essence, Wonderful, Wind Chimes, and more. But it's really an album that you have to hear start to finish, made up of countless recordings pieced together with extreme attention to detail, as well as some of the most complex arrangements pop music in the 1960s has seen. Smile was far more ambitious than Pet Sounds, and I say it was more ambitious than Sgt. Pepper's too. But with Brian's ear for melody and the trademark Beach Boys harmonies intact, it was just as accessible as both of those albums. Okay, back to this one. It says that Mike loves criticizing the direction that Brian's songwriting was going in. Capitol Records pressuring the band to finish the album before Brian thought it was ready. Brian's growing mental health issues and Brian feeling defeated by Strawberry Fields Forever. Smile was abandoned and Brian never attended something that ambitious again. The albums that followed Smiley Smile had similarly low stakes, and the Beach Boys turned themselves into a nostalgia act by 1974. When they released the popular Endless Summer compilation, made up of only pre-Pet Sounds material, unlike the Beatles, who followed Sgt. Pepper's Magical Mystery Tour with three more canonized albums, the Beach Boys became primarily known for their earlier, simpler material. They were an oldies act by the time the members were in their early 30s. If Smile came out in 1967, all that might have changed. The Beach Boys might have tried to top it again. The Beatles might have tried to top it too. The last half of the century of pop music might have looked entirely different. That's pretty interesting. I said this is my first time using these slides here, so I can't really I was kind of a little nervous about it, and I think I changed one too soon. So I do apologize for that. But I was pretty excited about doing that. I hope it came out okay. I'm nervous. Anyway, that's all I have today. If you like my podcast, please follow me. You can find my podcast on apps such as iHeartRadio, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and Google Podcasts. And you can find my podcast on YouTube. So I encourage you to watch a YouTube video of this if you haven't already. Please watch it at the slideshow. You get a better, probably a better feel of it, I'm guessing. But yeah, I encourage you to watch it. Check it out, this video on YouTube. But it's the same name as my podcast, Music, Facts, and Figures by Mark Andresito. Yeah, check it out. I encourage you to. That's all I have again. Thank you again for tuning in. I appreciate you. Until next time, have a good weekend. Have a good week. Stay safe. God bless. Goodbye. I'm going to end it here, folks. Peace.